Hi, everyone. Welcome to the inaugural podcast of Bleeding Hearts, Broken Knuckles. Basically, what this podcast is going to be about is talking about current events, politics, things going on in the U.S., international, basically things that get our dander up. We can rant about it. Hopefully, we educate a little bit, give you a little information, and above all else, make you laugh, because we're going to be having fun with this, and we hope you do, too. And you can check out more information, find some future and past podcasts if you want on the website bleedwith.us. My name is Crow. Joining me is Hunter.
How you doing?
And running the boards and helping us out is Cowboy.
Hello.
It's a lovely man voice you got there. So first off, we're going to start with the topic of the day. The jobs report came out. Perfectly enough, on April Fool's Day, it went down 0.1. It is now 8.8. I guess that's a good thing.
You know, people talk about the unemployment number as if it represents something real. This number, for a quick little bit of education, comes out of our Bureau of Labor Statistics here in the United States. And what they do is they take a tally of all the people currently receiving unemployment benefits. That means you don't go to work, you were laid off for no reason of your own, and you receive a payment from whichever state you happen to reside in or worked in. So, they're saying 8.8% of Americans that would be in the labor force are getting these checks right now. What's interesting about that number is it doesn't count people who got the checks until the checks ran out.
Right.
People who maybe working 12 hours a week at McDonald's, making not nearly enough to feed their kids.
The marginally employed.
Or the people who just gave up. I mean, plain and simple, some people just give up. Some people work for a while, get laid off for no reason of their own, and the company that lays them off really doesn't feel like paying the extra unemployment insurance, so comes up with a reason that they got fired. All sorts of other reasons to believe that number is significantly lower and the actual number of unemployed we have here in our great 2011 economy.
It's, 99 weeks is the longest you can collect unemployment?
Right, the 99ers.
Yeah.
And that varies by state. Some states actually are working right now to try to limit the number of weeks you can
so reduce it from take. Reduce it below 99.
From 99 to 60 to, you know, whichever number they're working on. No state's done this yet, but there's a number of them that are looking into it.
So, and I mean, given the length of the recession now, I mean, being unemployed for 2 years, I mean, there's a lot of people who are going off unemployment as other people do find jobs. So, I mean,
well, absolutely. You know, you got to remember that 2007, the economy started tanking. In 2008, by October, you had the stock market crash, layoffs are picking up countrywide, the housing bubble burst, and boom, here we are. You know, we really haven't seen much pickup in employment. We've seen the stock market push back up. The banks are doing pretty well. Record bonuses in every country of the world that has major investment banks. And our unemployment just went down 8.8% official.
Is anyone tracking the real, like, real numbers? I mean, is it even possible to do?
You know, there's a website that John Williams puts out. It's called Shadow Stats. You can look it up at shadowstats.org. And at Shadow Stats, what they do is they track the unemployment rate, which the Bureau of Labor Statistics calls U-3. They also have a broadest unemployment that the government puts out called U-6, which is significantly higher. And if you look at Shadow Stats, they try to actually measure the real unemployment.
Shadowstats.com, by the way, just popped
Shadowstats.com, not .org, apologize.
And the U-6 looks to be a bit above, it looks about 17%. Maybe down to about 16 right now. Actually, it dips right at the most recent, but I mean, that's significantly higher than 8.8.
Yeah.
Like double.
Yeah. And what's the Shadow Stats alternative measure?
So SGS alternative is up above, it's like 22 or 23.
Which, you know, would be about 1 out of 5 people who wants to be out there working full time, not able to do it.
Yeah.
Which seems right anecdotally.
Yeah. I mean, what's the, in our state, what's the current number? We're above national average.
Yeah, I think last time I looked, we were at 11.8% here in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically good times for everyone unless you're working class, middle class person, 40-hour work week. You know, you're not working at a bank. You're not working on Wall Street. You're not getting mega bonuses. You're just trying to string together some sort of life, have your kids go to a decent school, and things aren't going so well. But they have this number that comes out every month just so you could point to something and say, look, the economy's getting better. It's going down. It's not going up. So, I mean, I think that keeps people from freaking out as much. Keep thinking, well, maybe next week I'll be able to get something. Things are getting better.
Yeah, which is probably true. I mean, one thing we noticed really early on with all this unemployment and this great recession we're in was that it really hit a lot of, you know, outdoor workers, mostly men who work with their hands pretty hard, construction workers, manufacturing workers. You know, they took the biggest hit, and now it seems like things are transitioning and they're starting to go after some of the more traditionally indoor jobs, mostly, you know, public workers, teachers.
Going after the unions.
Yep, firemen, policemen, you know, and they're really trying to do this interesting thing, I think, where they split the middle class up. They split you into two groups, public workers versus private workers. You know, they're trying to say that the coffee shop owner and the construction worker and contractor should be pitted up against the policeman, fireman, and teacher as if they're actually stealing from each other, and you know, that's where the fight is here. And it's obvious when you look at how the money's flowing and how the stock market rebounds, but everyone's still sitting there out of work. That's not really the case.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to pit the middle class against each other. I mean, we see this in Wisconsin.
Now it's growing in Ohio and Indiana and other states that are throwing up anti-union bills.
Yeah, and I mean, we see the media, powers that be, fermenting, you know, preventing hate among one section of the middle class to say, look at this other section that actually have decent benefits. They shouldn't have those benefits. You don't. I mean, these are people who should be saying, well, we should have those benefits too, because, I mean, it's just reasonable standard of living. Not saying, well, we need to cut teachers' wages, which are not the problem.
And it's going back to this mindset that some people have and is getting drilled into other people's heads from various factions, from the right, the far right, where they're telling people that, you know, I earned it. I earned this money that's coming to me, welfare, Medicare, Medicaid, what have you. But those people over there who are telling you not to like, they didn't earn it, and they're taking from you. And that's fermenting and growing this kind of middle class, lower class warfare against each other.
Yeah, because that's what we should be doing right now.
I agree.
I guarantee, you know, if that greedy fireman wasn't taking all that money from the coffee shop owner, well, that, you know, somehow the coffee shop owner's taxes would go down. And the argument that you have a fireman who's taken away from the tax money of the coffee shop owner, and now the coffee shop owner has less money because he has benefits that are too good, and the coffee shop owner would keep more money if the taxes were down. So the whole argument comes around to the fact that the private sector creates tax dollars and the public sector does nothing useful. But what we did get to see this week was that the private sector sometimes not only doesn't create tax dollars, it takes them away.
Making out like the bandits that they are, paying no taxes while taking in federal money.
Yeah, so this was GE, and this is what we have. It's America's most complicated tax return. It's 17,000-something pages, I believe. It takes a very long time to do, and by the end of it, you have a company in General Electric that profited $14.2 billion and not only paid zero taxes, but in fact got $3.2 billion back. That's about the size of Wisconsin's projected budget deficit for next year. So, in this time when everyone's going around saying America's broke, America's broke, America's broke, how do we afford this?
We don't afford it. That's the simple answer. I mean, we're Look at the situation in Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin's obvious union breaking. I mean, when the leaders of the teachers union said that they would agree to the Governor Scott Walker's demands in terms of pay cuts, as long as they retain their right to collective bargaining, it stopped being about the money. I mean, Walker created the budget issue in Wisconsin. But back to GE. Well, 17,000 pages. I mean, I think
it's absolutely ridiculous. But the thing is that it's not just a fact of the, you know, recent recession. Going back 5 years, GE accumulated a total of $26 billion in American profits and received $4.1 billion back from the IRS. I mean, how do you, you know, no little company can compete with it. I mean, mostly GE's rebuttal is that, you know, they have losses from GE Capital. Just in case people don't understand, you know, GE might make your light bulbs, it might make jet engines and other real things that the real economy needs, but basically it's a bank and drag. All right, you have a company that claims to make stuff, but, you know, makes most of its money through complex financial trading just like any other big bank. When they say, oh, our losses were such that, you know, we need tax credits back from the government, what they don't tell you is anything that's making money, they just transfer offshore to some sort of tax haven. Anything that's losing money, they bring onshore, so they get money back from the IRS. The real fun game, it's legal, no one's saying they're breaking the law, but it certainly feels a little bit un-American to me, cowboy. How about you?
Yeah. That's not the cowboy way.
It's not cowboying up right there.
No.
I think the bigger issue is, this is just GE. What about the hundreds and hundreds of other medium and large and conglomerate corporations throughout the country that are doing the same exact thing? They're taking stimulus money, they're taking government money, saying they need help, while at the same time raking in profits after profits, giving out massive bonuses, and not paying taxes, not giving back to the government and the people that have been helping them over the past few years. And the second issue is something like Citizens United, something that devastated the elections of 2010. Just these corporations and the secret funding just pumping in millions and millions of dollars to run against candidates that, frankly, they don't agree with, they don't like. And now that this company has even more money, not paying any taxes, they could spend that money on the candidate that they want to put into office and to keep this ball rolling, to keep things going. More profits for them, less money for us.
Yeah, and I think you have to realize what they're really lobbying for here. I mean, they're going to go around and get a bunch of these politicians. Mostly they're on the Republican side, but there don't seem to be too many champions on the Democrat side that come out and will say, you know, we need to lower the corporate tax rate. It's 35%. 35%, GE just paid, you know, if you look at the total of the years, something along the lines of -20% over the last 5 years. So they're saying we need to lower the corporate tax rate, lower the corporate tax rate. Well, how much lower do you want than for -20%? I mean, you want my pants too? I'll just take them off and give them to you right now and bend over and grab my ankles.
I would like your pants.
The idea is that it's not even your pants anymore. It's GE's pants. And if you're cold, that's your problem. You have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You have to play by the rules. And if you don't, people are going to come after you. They're going to come get your money.
At least your bootstraps are exposed now that you don't have pants on.
I'm wondering where you clip them to at this point. I mean, you know.
You just use electrical cord and wrap it around your legs.
And hope for the best. It's absolutely insane that they want to lower the rate. And they make an interesting argument now, which is that poor, giant American corporations that do a lot of finance have to put all their profits offshore because we just don't tax them low enough here. If we lowered the corporate tax to 10%, then they're saying we'd pay the 10%. Well, of course, if they're paying -20 now, you think they're really going to pay the 10 when you drop it to that?
Yeah, I feel really bad for Coca-Cola when they have to move a factory to Mexico and another one to India because we're taxing them less than 0%.
It's great. And none of it's tied to whether or not they're employing people here. You know, over the course of the time that GE's sitting here for the last 5 years and, you know, getting its billions and billions of dollars back in taxes. It's moving jobs where? Offshore. That's it. That's what they do. They take American jobs and they ship them offshore. Now, they'll tell you, oh, well, we really didn't ship jobs offshore. You know, what we really did was we sold companies and spun off other companies. And they'll have all these complicated reasons why, you know, they're not actually getting rid of jobs. But
it's a lot of mental and gymnastics, basically, jumping through the hoops and using PR machines and fancy words to basically say, yeah, we're sending jobs away from you, but it's okay.
Yeah, so basically, you know, you take that, you know, say you take about $5 billion, you give them over the last 5 years, say it's about $1 billion a year, and that's on a, you know, we paid a lot more than that this last year, but say we give them $1 billion a year, well, that's, you know, $3 out of the pocket of every man, woman, and child in this country that just goes to GE for being GE.
I wish I could show everyone this amazing photo of this full pizza taco I just found on the internet. Sorry, it's derailed.
Well, it's good that you showed a full pizza taco, considering...
That's not a sexual act either. This is it's a pizza. Yeah, no, it's a pizza covered with ground beef, sour cream, guacamole, cheese, folded up like a taco.
Well, it's good that you brought it up, because there's a story that came out a few days ago about a morbidly obese man from Ohio who sat in the same chair for 2 years and had his skin fused to the maggot-infested fabric. Let that sink in for a few minutes while you're looking at the picture of the taco pizza. Now,
oh, God.
If you sit in a chair for 2 years, right, you're long enough that your skin gets fused to it. The police come into this guy's house when he goes unresponsive, and they say the smell is the worst thing they've ever smelled. These are guys who probably, you know, come across corpses and whatnot. The worst thing they've ever
smelled. Suicides, corpses, the worst of the worst. But no, no, no. This guy in his chair, sitting there for 2 years in his own waste, just stinking to high heaven.
Feces, urine, just everywhere.
God knows what else.
Skin fused to chair, wooden skin have become one.
Well, I'm glad that everyone who's potentially listening has turned it off at this point. throw up.
But the thing is, that's not the end of the story, though. It's unfortunately, this man passed away, but my concern is not so much that the man was fused to his chair, because that's not a story anymore. It's kind of slowly becoming the norm here in the United States. Thank you, Dollar Menu. But that he had a girlfriend, which is amazing in itself, but his girlfriend would bring him food every day, kind of compounding the problem of being a fat man stuck to a chair. And he lived with a roommate. Someone else lived with him. Someone else had to walk by him at some point during the week.
I want to emphasize this walking by, because I want to emphasize the smell. All right? The first news article I read about this, the cop said he had to throw his uniform away after responding to the call because of how bad the uniform stunk. So it's two people living with this guy.
So over the past 2 years...
Do you think they had a healthy sex life?
Maybe a sex life, I'm sure it wasn't healthy.
nothing about this is healthy.
I assume gravy was involved somewhere.
But
the thing is, he was stuck in the chair for 2 years. So presumably before that, he was still morbidly obese, but not stuck in the chair. So when his roommate would walk past him, wouldn't he smell it too? Wouldn't he see this guy? Wouldn't it get in his clothes?
Yeah.
Wouldn't he go to work and people go, wow, what's that smell? Would he just go, it's my roommate.
I don't think he went to work. I'm only guessing here. No article has actually talked about this, but I'm guessing this guy was on disability.
It does disability welfare.
Yeah, no way this guy could be working. It's hard to work when your skin's fused to a chair, although it feels that way when you're at an office job. So this guy, you know, the other interesting thing about it was people said, well, what about the landlord? They were renting this joint, right? Well, what's the landlord doing in all this? You know, so the landlord, I guess, says that she never knew anything was that wrong that she would come over and he always had a blanket on. Like, a blanket doesn't cover up, you know.
Smell.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those space blankets, you know?
It probably wasn't a blanket, it was probably a tarp, like a mini tarp that they used to cover a roof. They used to cover this gigantic shit covered man.
It's just maggots. Like, you know, maggots can crawl up from under blankets. I don't know. What this
two blankets
landlord's deal was, or why she would keep renting to him. It wasn't just the guy. They said that, you know, the whole condition of the apartment was absolute squalor. It was just a nightmare. And
we'll probably see it next season on Hoarders. Probably be the hit episode of the season.
Oh my god.
As a hoarder myself, I take offense.
Well, you're able to move and get up from a chair. You're not 100% hoarder. You're just a slob.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I have lots of cool stuff, though.
You got, like, 10-year-old newspapers.
Yeah, newspaper stacks are awesome.
Yeah, I went there when you finally crack, you can cut all the letters out and make secret messages. And get messages beaming to you from a station on Mars.
Alright.
I like how that's stated as a hypothetical they'll do in the future. You guys clearly haven't found that room yet.
Alright, we're gonna play a song and take a break, and we'll be back in a minute. Here on Bleeding Hearts, Broken Knuckles, talk about a story that got all of our danders up. Sean Patrick Duffy, the new Wisconsin 7th District representative,
GOP member
extraordinaire, recently complained to a town hall meeting that he was struggling to make ends meet on his $174,000 a year salary. And this was caught on camera, and take a listen.
$174,000, that's three of my families.
Yep.
Three times what I make.
Yep. I
understand, but how did this get so out of line? $174,000 a year for a congressman?
Yeah. So did you move to cut? Our budgets, I moved to cut by 5%. I did. I have no problem. Let's have a movement of foot. I walked into a job 6 weeks ago. That I worked incredibly hard. And I guarantee you, most of you, I guarantee you more debt than all of you. Six kids. I still pay off my student loans. I still pay my mortgage. I drive a used minivan. If you think I'm living high and all, I got one paycheck. So I struggle to meet my bills right now. Maybe it's easier for me if I get more paychecks, maybe. But at this point, I'm not living high in the hog. I have no problem. You know what? I think we should all take a step back and go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I apologize for the sound quality of the recording. The town hall meeting isn't super. But what Sean Duffy is saying is that, well, he's very arrogantly claiming that he guarantees that he has more debt than all of you, referring to town hall members.
Which is our fault, because, you know, I made him take out that second mortgage for his vacation.
Yeah, he claims that, you know, he's paying a mortgage. What he doesn't say is that that's for his second house. He only has six kids. That's definitely his choice. And he's still paying off his student loans. And God knows that he's the only person in America paying student loans.
I can safely say I'll be paying student loans 10 years after I'm dead. So yeah, it's hard for me to feel sympathy for the former Real World Road Rules All-Star, you know, complaining about how much money he's making when it is vastly, vastly more money than all three of us combined.
Yeah.
And the great thing is that Wisconsin voters got rid of David Obey, you know, the former Appropriations Committee chairman of the House of Representatives. Mighty, mighty powerful representative.
15-term incumbent Democrat representative, Dave Obey, by the way.
15-term, right? Now, this guy could shake loose some money into his district, I guarantee it. If you're the Appropriations Committee chairman, you can get projects going, get grants going, get money into your district, and probably get some people hired. They got rid of him for a real-world Boston star who apparently can't seem to make ends meet on $174K a year.
And the other thing is that the Republican Party in Polk County, Wisconsin, is now scrambling to clean up the mess from this video. I mean, they know that it's a PR disaster. I mean, they're not even trying to spin it like he's anything but a jerk. You know, doing the sensible thing that shows that they're in touch with the realities of how media works these days, they're trying to throw money at the problem to get the video taken off the internet, which is going to happen.
They should get the internet police to take down every single video that's out there.
Well, yeah, internet lawyers always work great, you know, when you put something on the internet. It's so easy to get rid of it.
It's not like it was just on one website and they tried to get it down as soon as possible. It's far, far too late for that to happen. And the kicker of all this is the committees that Duffy serves on are the Committee of Financial Services, in particular Subcommittee on Financial Institutions and Consumer Credit, and the Subcommittee on Insurance, Housing, and Community Opportunity.
So what that means is the Subcommittee on Finance, Insurance, and Real Estate, basically the whole FIRE sector, the people who, you know, apparently don't produce anything but papers and policies and compound interest, and meanwhile suck all the money out of us.
And we're and for the record, Duffy recently spoke out saying that Wisconsin public servants need to take a pay cut. People were making, you know, vastly less money than him, but he's having trouble making ends meet on $174,000 a year
of taxpayer money.
Yeah, yeah, that's his congressman. You know, that's his paycheck from the taxpayers. And but he thinks public servants, other public servants who aren't him, need to take the pay cut.
Well, of course, because you know, a teacher doesn't provide anything useful, but a real world all-star in Congress on the banking committees, I'm sure, you know, produces something useful, like, I don't know, maybe 20% tax rates.
Funny internet videos for us to talk about.
That is kind of useful.
Now, speaking of lowering the wage of laborers, Maine is now lowering child labor minimum wage from $7.50 to $5.25 an hour for the first 180 days of employment.
Well, you know, I mean, these fat cat kids making $7.50 an hour, I'm breaking the money. They're taking my tax dollars. Enough is enough.
These greedy 16-year-olds working at McDonald's just need to help out the country and take less than $7.50.
And take a haircut, kid. I mean, what are you buying with it? Ice cream cones and baseball cards?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. $7.50 is kind of a ridiculously high wage. I mean, it's certainly way above anything livable.
Yeah,
I mean, those kids are really...
Yeah, I mean, at like $200-$300 a week, I mean, you can almost afford a studio apartment in a bad neighborhood.
or a few gallons of gas.
Yeah. Enough to get to work and back in Maine. I mean, you drive 40 miles each way, you know, there you go. There's a 1 hour pay to get to work, 1 hour pay to get back at $5. Forget it. You may as well just stay home.
And this is part of the whole, like, assault on, like, unions, working class. In Maine, the governor just took down a mural of union workers, Rosie the Riveter, This is going from state to state, Maine, Indiana, Ohio,
Wisconsin. Because I can't
think
of anything more communist than Rosie the Riveter. I mean, what's more un-American than woman going to work when all the men are off fighting Hitler?
Well, I mean, and I love the quote from the governor on taking down that mural, which was displayed in a public building. Said that it portrayed a one-sided view of the labor struggle in America.
Yeah, because the other side was the Monopoly man rolling around
yeah.
with piles of money and buying extra monocles.
Well, we don't want to demonize, you know, the Monopoly man.
Won't someone please think about the Monopoly man? How is he going to afford the boardwalk in Park Avenue?
Top hats aren't cheap.
You know, and then not only on top hats cheap, but I mean, he's got to go to another country to get those stem cells growing him. Past 5 foot nothing or whatever the Monopoly is, bald jerk.
The cost of a haircut on his mustache is more than these kids are making in 40 hours a week. $750 an hour, 40 hours a week, and no minor is working 40 hours a
yeah,
week.
Yeah, exactly.
But 750 times 40 is $300.
Yeah, and that's not counting what they're taking out of you for tax.
Yeah, I mean you're making a little over 200.
So,
I mean, and 525 is 210. So, I mean...
Yeah, at 210, by the time they take all that money out of you, you're really at a point where, why bother? why?
a lot of those minimum wage paying jobs are going to older people anyway. A lot of seniors can no longer retire, and they need to take that job at McDonald's, take that job at Kohl's or even Walmart working the register because they don't have any retirement funds.
Well, and this is the argument that he's going to make. You know, he's going to go out there and he's going to tell the people, well, if we lower the minimum wage for, you know, working age kids, there, 16, 17, 18, we drop the minimum wage for them to $5, we can hire more of them. Well, I guess that's always true. You know, if you pay someone a penny an hour, you can hire a billion people in this country. But they'll be making a penny an hour and dying in the street.
This is the same argument that's used to justify moving factories overseas. I mean, it's we can pay workers less, then products cost less. Well, I mean, if you look at how minimum wage has tracked the consumer price index over the last 30 years, I mean, it's practically flat versus, you know, the CPI going up.
Yeah, so the CPI goes up, you know, it's sort of a linear rate, maybe a couple percent a year, and minimum wage stays flat the whole time. But the other thing you have to consider is that CPI itself, like we were talking about with the unemployment rate, is kind of a cooked number by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They do a lot of fun. They do things called hedonics where they'll take, you know, a television and say, oh, well, now it has picture in picture. So even though the price went up by $20, the value's $40, and the price of the good went down. So they do all these crazy things, and that shadow stats page is a good one to go.
No one uses picture in picture. That's the most made-up number I've ever heard.
Absolutely, and that's what they do. They actually go around and do that. They might say, oh, well, look, you know, the price of a Ford Taurus is $27,000 this year. But it's actually a better value than last year because it can parallel park itself or something. You know, they'll take one of those random new features they throw in it and say that it's worth X amount of dollars and subtract that from what you actually have to pay to buy something.
I'd like to have the job calculating, like, the increased value versus features.
Yeah, well, someone gets to do it, and they've been cooking it that way since the Clinton administration. So now you get, that website where they've tracked it the pre- 1980 way the whole time, and you see that it's actually probably double what they claim it is. So we're at a point now where minimum wage you can't live on. I mean, in the 50s maybe you could one day own a home, feed your family, make sure there's shelter, have maybe one vehicle for the family and get by, and now you can't
at all.
So what we need to do is lower minimum wage. I mean, that's the answer.
Ultimately it creates a domino effect too. These younger kids can't get a job because the minimum wage jobs are now being taken by older generations. They don't work X amount of years. They don't have income coming in. This also feeds into what we were talking about before with the unemployment rate being 8.8, but not counting these kids as well. You know, why am I going to bust my ass 30 hours a week and get $150? Just not going to bother working. And, you know, it's going to create an even bigger problem when that generation comes of age, comes into their mid-20s and 30s. when they don't have money socked away, they don't even have minimal experience just working a register. You know, they might not have enough money for a vehicle. They might not have enough money even to put themselves through college.
No, they won't. We're in the $3.50, $4 gallon for gas age right now, and you know, if you're only making $5 an hour and it takes you a couple gallons of gas to get to work and back, and they give you a 4-hour shift, you're net negative for working 4 hours.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is just even picking up a minimum wage job right now. I know people who are just looking for anything to get by and are not getting callbacks from like the supermarket. People with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, trying to bag groceries at Stop and Shop. The competition to get anything is ridiculous right now.
There is one solution. You become a massage parlor inspector, or at least a fake one. In Newport Beach, California, a former police officer has pleaded not guilty to showing up at a SoCal massage parlor wearing a badge and a gun and demanding a free rubdown and cash for his inspection of the business. Edward Justin Laporte, who was accused of posing as an inspector, got a 30-minute back rub, police say. He was then accused of requesting a frontal massage and $200. The manager of the Golden Spa was suspicious about the supposed quality control check and called Lake Forest licensing offices. Laporte, who's 47, left when a real inspector arrived and started asking questions. Laporte then allegedly fled and was tracked down by his license plate number.
Wait, there's a real inspector?
You gotta make sure the rub downs are up to code, that the right lube is being used and the right technique.
The mop is clean? I mean, what are you doing?
Can I say that I appreciate like the size of the balls on this guy for not only going in there and getting a free massage, claiming to be a fake inspector, but also then requesting that they pay him $200
for a
service
frontal
to go in and say, you have to pay me for a frontal massage.
I just hope he was running down the street naked with a tiny little like hand towel
being chased by the real
inspector. I wonder if the real inspector has a gun. That's what I'd like to know.
You
is it a dangerous
real inspector
enough job?
Ever asked for? I mean, the fact that they gave him a bad massage for nothing, you know? You think this guy, like, knew the real inspector for a while and was like, well, that seems like a pretty slight deal. I'm gonna go get that for myself.
He had it planned out. He had the badge, he had the gun. He probably had a little map drawn. He went in with a full plan. He got his hand job, he got his money. And he tried to go on his way.
This is why I think we need to privatize inspection services in America.
Yeah, I want Halliburton to be running the massage parlor
our
industry.
Inspections, yeah.
Yeah.
I want Dick Cheney running this thing.
Full frontal. Heart attack.
Oh, good luck, honey. That thing hasn't worked in 3 decades.
Oh, my heart. My heart. Oh, it's okay again.
That's too easy to razz on Cheney, man. The guy
it
like,
is. I mean,
oozes evil. It's like making fun of the Emperor on Star Wars.
All right, we're going to take a little break, play a song, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Stop that! seems that there are no easy answers to the same questions I've been posed. What does it mean? What would you bother asking me? Like it's something I should know. Just cause they paid me to take that, I guess their money gave me credence. Watch our record store as you slug out a minor note. So that's all say.
Right, we are back here on Bleeding Hearts, Broken Knuckles. Favorite part of the show right now, we're going to make this kind of a weekly thing. We're going to talk about the 2012 election, specifically talking about the myriad and multitude of candidates, non-candidates, people officially running, making exploratory committees, people just going on talk shows and radio, just spouting off their usual playing coy. Well, I haven't decided yet. I'm not sure if I want to run. We'll kind of just run down all of them. And in the coming weeks, we'll kind of focus on an individual, whether it be someone like Mitch Daniels, Tim Pawlenty, or some of the more fun people, Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, the usual nut bars. And we'll kind of profile them, talk about specifically the crazy things they've said, the crazy things they've done, how they would really damage the country, and how, if they do eventually make it to the top of the heap, basically, and talk about how they do against Obama. So basically right now we're going to just run down the list and kind of do a little once-over of each candidate's, starting with your personal favorite, Newt Gingrich.
Oh, buddy boy, Newt.
Beloved Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, thrice married. What's the official story again? Didn't he cheat on his first wife, who was in for cancer treatment? And he asked her for a divorce?
Yeah, it was
something creepy.
Something creepy, something John Edwards-esque, you know? The same goofy haircut, goofy personality. You know, my wife's in the hospital with cancer, and even though I'm ancient and ugly, I'm going to go bone someone else because I'm rich, and that's basically a...
The faux charming, sort of Southern, but not really...
Eminent blowhard.
I think that's a great way to describe him, blowhard. And he's been in the news recently. He's kind of been playing coy with the is he or isn't he running, not officially making an exploratory committee, but making a committee to think about making a committee,
Which is a great committee to have, the Committee on Making Committees.
He's basically giving a promise ring to the American people, committing himself to maybe committing himself to running for president. And he's also been in the news this past week with his epic flip-flops on Libya. He's for going in, he is not for going in, but you don't have to take my word for it. Just take a listen.
What would you do about Libya?
Exercise a no-fly zone this evening. We don't need to have the United Nations. All we have to say is that we think that slaughtering your own citizens is unacceptable and that we're intervening. This is a moment to get rid of him. Do it. Get it over with. I would not have intervened. I think there are a lot of other ways to affect Gaddafi. I think there are a lot of allies in the region that we could have worked with. I would not have used American and European forces.
Oh, Newt, you incorrigible little rascal. He's for it, he's against it, he doesn't know, it doesn't really matter. As long as he's against Obama, that's what matters.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to not believing in anything and just doing what some pollster says, or just being contrarian to the powers that be for the sheer sake of it, Newt's got a gold medal at BS is what it comes down to, really.
The king of bull.
I don't understand how anyone wouldn't know that after he made what was literally a federal case over under the death blow job 2 years back.
Oh, that little thing. Next up is one of my personal favorites from the great state of Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann. What can possibly be said about her that hasn't already been screamed out of windows? Just the anti-gay, anti-women's choice, just anti-everything that's sane to the usual common person.
Not to mention the fact that apparently Lexington and Concord happened in New Hampshire.
Yeah, she constantly takes pride in being wrong. In history, in facts, it's great that she's wrong. She's thrilled to be wrong. And if anyone points it out, well, they're just the lamestream media.
Yeah, the lamestream media persecuting her for talking a lot about the Founding Fathers and not knowing anything about the American Revolution, I guess. I guess it doesn't really matter. When you look into her eyes, all you can see is anger and dumb.
And emptiness, too. I think there's a pale emptiness just kind of floating behind there, filled with anger and rage, boils over, and points basically towards liberals, Obama, you, me, the common, normal person, and apparently all of us are anti-American.
Yep, so we'll listen to a little clip about that right now.
Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota joins us right now. So this is a character issue. You believe that Barack Obama may, you're suspicious because of this relationship, may have anti-American views. Otherwise, it's probably irrelevant to this discussion.
So absolutely. You believe
that Barack Obama may have anti-American views?
Yeah, absolutely.
What parts of America would you say are anti-American? What parts of this country?
Well, I would say that people who hold anti-American views, I don't think it's geography. I think it's people who don't like America, who detest America.
The 30% of this country calls itself liberal. So are they anti-American?
I think the people that Barack Obama has been associating with are anti-American by and large, the people who are radical leftists.
How many Congress people, members of Congress, do you think are in that anti-American crowd you described?
You'd have to ask them, Chris. I'm focusing on Barack Obama and the people that he's been associated with.
But do you suspect that a lot of people you serve with...
their anti-American nature.
Well, he's a United States Senator from Illinois. He's one of the people you suspect is being anti-American. How many people in the Congress of the United States do you think are anti-American? You've already suspected Barack Obama. Is he alone or are there others? How many do you suspect of your colleagues as being anti-American?
What I would say is that the news media should do a penetrating expose and take a look. I wish they would. I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America? I think people would love to see an expose like that.
Well, there you have it. We're all anti-Americans. Anyone who doesn't believe in her little worldview, anti-American. So, there you have it. Next up, we have Donald Trump. Next! Now we have former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, kind of very boring, doesn't set people's worlds on fire. He came out with a book recently where he talked about enjoying watching hockey, which I don't think anyone believed in. I think it was a big pile of bull. And in the past couple years, he used to talk about environmentalism. It seemed like a, you know, reasonable person, you know, move towards energy efficiency. Now that he's planning on running, 180. Completely against cap and trade, against fixing what needs to be fixed and helping out the environment. So that's a big part of what's going to bite him in the ass in the coming months.
Well, what's great is when they don't even want energy efficiency. I mean, you know, there's nothing more simple and easy to get behind and nonpartisan than insulate your house. But apparently, people go away from that and just say, drill, baby, drill. We got 2% of the world's reserves. We use 25% of the world's oil. We could drill everywhere, you know. Maybe we'll have enough for 6 months, maybe a year. But
not to mention all the ecological disasters that will eventually or inevitably happen down the road. But it doesn't matter because that's not in the here and now.
Yeah, so that's a great one. I don't know, I'm bored. I'm already, you know, it's boring
he's
a boring candidate. And it's just...
Next up is Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts.
Architect of Obamacare.
Yeah, the big man of Obamacare, but now that he talks about it, it's completely different.
Time to repeal it, yeah.
Completely different from what he did. That was on the state level. This is on the national level. It's completely different.
Yeah, so he does that. I mean, he's obviously got some tough past in Massachusetts he's going to have to convince the rest of the Republican base of when he goes to do this primary, mm-hmm. since he did a lot of relatively centrist and left.
Centrist and sometimes left when it came to being the governor of Massachusetts.
Which is why he was popular, by the way. You know, right. He's pretty central and half reasonable.
Right, well, that's what he would probably aim towards if he were to become the nominee, is, you know, you tack to either the left or the right if you're a Democrat, Republican, and then you tack to the center because you won your primary, you won the people in your base. I think he'll probably have one of the hardest times. That was the hardest thing he had to deal with in 2008. And now the Tea Party and all this rhetoric going on will make it even harder for him when you have people like our next person, Herman Cain.
Who's Herman? Talk about a world-class nutcase.
Who's Herman Cain, you ask? Well, that's a good question because not a lot of people outside of the far right know. Herman Cain is the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, a Midwest pizza chain. I spent some time out Midwest and had the pizza. And that's it. There's no other story for that. It exists. It's either that or like Domino's or Pizza Hut when you're out there. But Herman Cain is an interesting fellow. He's very outspoken, very fiery speaker. And just this past week, he asked
really a very interesting question, which you can hear now.
Mr. Cain, you came under a bit of controversy this week for some of the comments made about Muslims in general. Would you be comfortable appointing a Muslim either in your cabinet or as a federal judge?
No, I will not. And here's why. There's this attempt to gradually ease Sharia law and the Muslim faith into our government. It does not belong in our government. This is what happened to Europe. And little by little, to try and be politically correct, they made this little change. They made this little change. And now they've got a social problem that they don't know what to do with hardly. And here's the other, the question that was asked that raised some questions, and my grandfather would say, I does not care. I feel the way I feel. I was asked, what is the role of Islam in America? I thought that was an odd question. I said, the role of Islam as American is for those that believe in Islam to practice it and leave us alone. Just like Christianity, we have a First Amendment. And I get upset when the Muslims in this country, some of them, try to force their Sharia law onto the rest of us. Case in point, Oklahoma. Oklahoma. Oklahoma had a ballot referendum, and they voted American law in American courts. That's the simple description of it. No Sharia law would be recognized in the courts in Oklahoma. 70% of the voters said, we agree with that. A federal judge blocked the implementation of that result. I don't know what the status of it is now. But how dare a judge come in and go against the will of the people?
Where have you seen attempts to establish Sharia law?
They've done it. One judge did it up in New Jersey and ruled in a case. Then last week we heard about a judge down in, was it Texas? It might have been Texas where a judge said that there was a dispute in a mosque and he was going to consider ecclesiastical law in his deliberations because of a dispute that was going on inside the mosque. This is the United States of America. Even though it was going on inside of a mosque, that doesn't mean that you execute the laws based upon what goes inside of that church. What about inside of a Catholic church? What about inside of a Baptist church? It doesn't make any sense. And so my point is, the First Amendment guarantees people the freedom of expression relative to their religion. It does not guarantee them the opportunity to push their religion off on us. That's what the First Amendment says.
Well, I wonder what the weather is like on the planet that Mr. Kane is living on, because that is not of this earth.
Yo, I went down to New Jersey with my girlfriend. They made her put a burger in that scarf on, man.
Sharia law is taking over. You
don't. Have you seen Jersey Shore? They're all covered up.
Conservative, beautiful, lovely Jersey Shore. There, in the coming weeks, we'll definitely delve more into the wonderful world of Mr. Kane.
Wonderful world of Kane, man.
Next up, good old Haley Barbour. Southern former governor, lobbyist for many, many years. He had air travel on his jet, which is paid for by taxpayer money. And if you want an interesting read, just look up the article he was interviewed in where he talked about the White Citizens Council in Yazoo City. Definitely an interesting read, and we'll delve more into that at another time.
No, I just wanted to mention he's also Colonel Sanders' nephew.
Colonel Sanders after about 100 buckets of extra crispy.
Yeah, well,
no original
Colonel
recipe.
Colonel didn't have extra crispy when he was little. This guy grew up with it, man. Sitting on the porch, eating extra crispy, drinking mint juleps in a white suit with a black bow tie. That's the type of thing we're talking about.
Next up, Rick Santorum.
By the way, I think you should Google Santorum or Google define Santorum, because that pretty much says it all.
Exactly. We'll definitely delve into him more, too, because he's quite the character, talking about how Social Security is no longer solvent because of too many abortions.
Yeah, if we just all had a bunch more kids on our $5 main minimum wage, we'd, at 16 years old, they'd be paying in, $17 a month into Social Security, and it'd all be solvent.
Try to connect those dots and try to keep the blood from flowing out of your ears when you think about it.
Into your ass.
Next, Roy Moore. Who's Roy Moore, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. He is the former judge that a few years back had the Ten Commandments placed outside of his courthouse. And that man wants to be a president.
Yep. Sharia law, no. Ten Commandments, yes.
Just look up George Carlin, Ten Commandments. That'll answer all your questions.
Yeah, he boils them down pretty quick.
Next, Ron and or his son, Rand Paul.
I gotta say, Ron Paul's out there. He's obviously a libertarian. He's a bit wacky.
Just a bit.
All right, fine. He's plenty wacky. But one thing is, he's at least been consistent with it. Rand, I don't know, man. I don't know. The apple fell a little bit far from the tree. That guy,
Aqua Buddha.
Yeah, well, you got the weird Aqua Buddha crap. But then you got this guy who claims to have been a libertarian, this, that, the other thing. And now he's pretty much just communitarian, right-wing conservative. There's no libertarian strain even left in him that I can notice.
Well, you can church up a name any way you want it. No matter what you call it. Next, we have Buddy Romer, former governor of Louisiana. Next, Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. And the always mentioned, but no one ever knows what the hell she's doing, the half-term governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann are kind of the same person. The only real difference I can see is that Michelle Bachmann speaks with punctuation. Palin has some sort of...
Exclamation points count as...
Yeah, well, she's got exclamation points, but the sentences, they kind of roam on like this, you know? And when the media does the things that it does to the people, you know, it always does to, then we end up here. And it's, I don't think it's very fair that the media can do what it does that we end up here. I mean, that's... At least Michelle Bachmann doesn't give you one of those constantly.
That's because she stuns you with her lack of common knowledge, her lack of facts.
Like I said, that she has in common with Palin. They're almost clones. It's just that one knows how to finish a sentence. I don't know what's worse, really.
Maybe they'll team up like Voltron or a Megazord and destroy us all.
Yeah, well, you know, 2012.
It's going to be an interesting race, and over the next couple weeks, we'll definitely delve more into each individual candidate. That about does it for this edition of Bleeding Hearts, Broken Knuckles. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out the website, bleedwith.us, and have all the information up there, a little synopsis of the show, emails to contact us, tell us what you like, have any questions, and we will see you all next week.
See you next week.
The gods told me to relax.